Welcome back, my friends. Welcome to the broadcast. It's Eric the Freedom Screamer on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Thanks for joining us tonight. If you're here tonight, you're in the right place. I feel sorry for the people who are sitting around watching the idiot box, that is the TV. We have information here tonight that will blow your mind, and we have a very special guest. Mr. James Perloff is with us tonight. James, are you with us yet?
Yeah, I am here.
Oh, fantastic. Give me a couple of minutes here to get things organized, and I want to bring in Gary from Michigan at the beginning of our topic tonight. Give Gary just a quick couple of minutes, and then we'll get right over to James Perloff. I asked James to come to the broadcast tonight. Now, first I want to say, if it goes well tonight, maybe James would be agreeable to coming on a semi-regular basis to discuss historical events. He has excellent analysis of history and things that went on behind the curtain, so to speak. Sometimes behind the Iron Curtain, sometimes behind the American Curtain. So anyway, and so we appreciate James being with us tonight. And I asked him to come tonight to talk. I particularly enjoyed hearing his comments about the existence of God, creationism versus evolution. And he makes a great case that, well, I'll let him make the case and the conclusion all as well at once. But before we get into the existence of God, creation versus evolution, and all the political and social and spiritual schemes and deceits and that are going on with this evolution thing, I think it's a perfect time of year, right, with the celebration that we have of the birth of the Savior, to discuss the Creator, the existence thereof, and the antithesis, the Antichrist system, promoting what I believe is the lie called evolution. And we really appreciate James being here. So, but before we get into the existence of God, I think it's important that we discuss the name of God. For that, we're going to turn to Gary in Michigan. Gary, can you give us a quick couple of minutes, review the history of the name of God, and a brief prayer to bless our broadcast tonight, and we'll move forward to James.
Good. Hi, James. This is Gary Don Blackwell. I'm in Minden City, Michigan. And looking very forward to hearing what you have to say. I'm going to make this quicker. I done a little thing from the Strong's Concordance about the name, okay? We use this name Jesus all over the country. I was raised with it, and hundreds of thousands of people have been raised with this. But it occurs 983 times in 942 verses in the New World, in the New Testament only, and does not occur in the Noah Webster Dictionary. It does not appear in the Noah Webster Dictionary, not one time, okay? And I went to where I took some of the information from Matthew chapter 1, verse 1. We'll slip down quickly to the word God. God occurs 44,447 times in 3,878 verses. People say, why are you doing that? Well, we want to know where this God comes from. And it says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. That's nothing to do with his name, okay? And some people want to call him Elohim, and on and that goes. And then I take a strong out of the Strong's Concordance 8430, which is God in the Hebrew, and then I take the God, which is in the Greek, which is H410. We won't go into all those, but people can reference those and look them up. Then I put in the word Yah, and it's in the King James Version I have, it's J-A-H. It occurs only one time in one verse, and it's in Psalms chapter 68, verse 4. It's a sing unto God. I don't like to use the word. I use the word Yod-Hivahi, but we'll get to that. A slug, sing praises to his name. And says precious to his name, extol him that rideth upon the heavens by his name Yah, J-A-H, and rejoice before him. And that comes from in the Hebrew, and it's only in the Hebrew, H 30 and 50. Okay, and that's the covers of the name Yah. And then we look at the word Lord. It occurs 7,836 times in 6,668 verses. And I took the one out of Genesis to do that. And the Lord in the Hebrew is H 30 68. And if you go a little bit further, you get into the what's in the New Testament in the Lord, okay, that comes from G 29:62. So then we go down, we look at the word Christ, and that a lot of people call him Lord God, Jesus Christ, and on occurs. It occurs 555 times in 522 verses. The New Testament, in the New Testament only again, the book of the generations of Jesus Christ and the son of David and the son of Abraham, and all is a genealogy thing. But the word Christ in the Greek is 5547. And then we go to the word Messiah. It occurs two times only, okay, in two verses, one in Daniel chapter 9, verse 25 and 26. And that's only in the Hebrew. So in the Hebrew, it's H4899. Then we have what I call the tetragrammaton, which I've taken out of the Sacred Name Bibles, and this is the word Yod He Vai He. That is the best of the my ability research, and I'm open for any other research that can spell it out better than this. But you know, is this the best I have? And that's Y H V H, and that's how it is in the English. Okay, I have the Paleo Hebrew up here, you know, what they call a tetragrammaton. So with that, I yield, and I hope we have a great evening. Thank you very much, and may our Father Yodibai bless our time as we come before the King of Kings to be. He was our King of Kings, but we as Israelites decided that we didn't want to have Yodibai as our king, so we want to be like everybody else, so we chose a king. And we can see what the king results have been just in our lifetime, and how it's been over the years, and history has been unbelievable. But we now have a King of Kings, but it's not the King Yadibahi we're talking about. We have a king in every state, a king in all through the United States, and kings throughout the Israelite empire. So that I yield, and Yadibahi bless. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Gary. We appreciate that. Y-H-V-H, Yod He Vahi. Y is Yod, H is He, V is Va, H is He, Yod He Vahi. I think that's the closest we can get here tonight. I wanted to get that out there. James, thank you for your patience. I want you to take this wherever you think you want to take it. Start wherever you want to start. There's no parameters. You have the latitude to take the conversation wherever it wants, wherever you think it should go. Don't feel you have to speak for a couple of minutes and then stop for me to, you know, ask you another question. You just go. If you're on a roll, you keep going for the whole hour, my friend. If you hear the music, that means we have a break coming up. And with that, I'm going to turn the discussion on the existence of God, creation, and the scam called evolution over to Mr. James Perloff of Refuge Books. James, thank you.
Now, sorry, did I hear you say we're heading up to a break?
No, I just said when you hear music, that'll indicate a break. And so you just take all the right conversation away and run with it until you hear music. Go ahead, Mr. James Perloff. Thanks for being with us tonight on the RBN Network.
Well, thanks, Gary. I've been on RBN before with people like Deanna Spingola, but this is the first time I've been on your show. I appreciate Gary giving us that review of God's names in the Bible. Wasn't quite sure, though, why you selected that as an intro for tonight. I know that we're going to be talking about the attacks on God, but I wasn't quite sure why the names of God were selected for tonight's intro. I was just curious why you and Gary.
With Christmas coming up, it seemed an appropriate mix. You make such a good case against evolution and for creationism that, of course, it just leads to the conclusion there must be a creator. So I thought, right, since Gary was in knowledge on the name of the creator and other names that have been used, I thought that might be a good fit. So thanks for indulging us on that.
Well, I appreciate having them delineated that way. Well, you asked me tonight if I would talk about creation versus evolution, and this is actually a topic that I have written a couple of books on going way back to 1999 and 2002, and actually in 2001 I was giving almost three radio show talks a week on this topic. You know, things were kind of quiet on the home front back then, and then September the 11th, something really hit us, and there wasn't a talk show host in the United States who wanted to do a show on creation evolution after that. Our whole geopolitical landscape changed, and when I found out was behind 9/11 and the broader implications. It certainly changed my focus as well. So you're asking me to address a topic that I don't do a lot. I still do occasional church talks on it and radio shows, but not often, so I may be a little rusty with some of this.
That's okay. This will be great.
Another thing I should just mention is that I know you said you watched SGT Report, my talk there. It's actually been the most watched interview that SGT Report has done. One little difference, though, is that we, you know, when I give a PowerPoint talk and when I did SGT Report, we use a lot of images, and we're just on the airwaves tonight. So some of the things about evolution, it really helps to clarify if you have a picture in front of you, and we're going to be missing that tonight. But we'll ask people to. I'll try to keep it as listener friendly as possible. And by the way, I just noticed something today, Eric, which is you picked kind of an appropriate day because it was on this day in 1912, 105 years ago today, that the New York Times published an article called "Darwin Theory Proved True," and it was all about the Piltdown Man. As being proof of evolution, and clergymen were ridiculed after that. And 41 years later, they found out that it was a fraud. You know, they called evolution a self-correcting science. Well, it took over 44 decades in this case. But, you know, for a lot of our listeners, you know, they may feel like, you know, you guys want to talk about evolution. Well, that's just a biological theory. I mean, we're going to just sit there all night and talk about amino acids. You know, this sounds like a real snoozer. So, you know, what I usually do, whether I'm giving a PowerPoint talk to kids or doing a video radio show, is I first talk about the relevance of this to our everyday lives. Certainly, if you go into a public school today and you say you don't believe in evolution, you will be ridiculed, sometimes even by the teacher, let alone the kids. And if you're a parent and you see what's going on in the world around you, you see the transgenderism, homosexual marriage, role models like Miley Cyrus, if you're not a strong Christian, you might decide, you know what, I want to send my kid to church. At least he'll have some kind of moral foundation. But one of the problems, and this goes back decades, you can send your child to Sunday school and church and have him read the Bible, but then he goes to public school and he starts to hear an extremely different story. Now, in the Bible, Gary's quoting Genesis there, the Bible says that God created the heavens and the earth. They go to public school, they teach you that the Big Bang created the heavens and the earth. God's not even part of the picture. And of course, that's supposed to be scientific, even though matter and energy cannot create itself. We know that energy can be changed, but it can't create itself from nothing, but that's what they're teaching nonetheless, and nobody questions it. And, of course, the Bible also teaches us in Genesis that God created all life forms, but in public school you'll hear that all life forms were created by random processes, a primordial soup. You know, the earth was created 5 billion years ago, and sunlight hit and rain hit the earth, and oceans were formed, and eventually lightning struck an array of chemicals, and they formed themselves into our first single-celled ancestors. And God really has nothing to do with it. It's just a chance process. And then as far as man goes, which is really important because you're talking about your personal identity, you know, God created man in his image according to the Bible, but according to the theory of evolution, which is taught in public schools, and by the way, some Christian schools as well, according to the theory of evolution, man actually evolved from ape-like creatures through natural selection and survival of the fittest. And actually, we're just one more animal. We're not different from the other animals, except we happen to get a little more highly evolved. The world is not special or created in God's image at all. So if your child is going to church one day a week in public school five, he's getting outnumbered here. And after a while, he starts to say, you know, well, maybe that stuff I'm hearing in church, it's just a bunch of hooey. I mean, after all, the priest or the pastor, what does he know? He went to seminary, big deal. You know, these science guys, they establish the truth of things by scientific method. Now, as we're going to see today, evolution is not based on scientific method. But nonetheless, many kids start to say, you know what, if evolution is scientifically true, then what I'm hearing in church must be hogwash. And I was talking to a guy recently, a churchgoer, and He said all four of his kids, after they went to college, came back not believing in God. And that's a very typical story you'll hear. So I think it is very relevant to address this. Julian Huxley, the Huxley family, was very good friends with Charles Darwin. He said this, quote, "Darwinism removed the whole idea of God as the creator of organisms from the sphere of rational discussion," unquote. And that's the picture we're facing today, and have been actually since the 19th century, when Darwin wrote his book, The Origin of Species.
It almost sounds like he was eager to make that conclusion, and it sounded like the way he made that, just that he was in a hurry to make that statement, and it was part of his kind of agenda that he was looking to go there, so to speak.
What we're going to see today is that this was part of an agenda. And, before I move ahead to demonstrate the impact on generating atheism of that theory had, I just want to mention, because I know I'm sure some of our listeners are probably very pro-evolutionist, probably maybe the only thing they've been taught. I sometimes hear people say something like this. They'll say, well, I was taught evolution. It didn't affect me any at all. It didn't turn me into Charles Manson, so what's the big deal? And that's true. There's some people, they say they believe in the Bible and evolution. Actually, pretty hard to do that, though. If you look at the story of Adam and Eve, recounted in Genesis, and compare that to Darwin's theory of evolution and billions of years gradually developing men through survival of the fittest, they're very different. You can try to make them compatible. But I recognize the fact that that there are people who say, well, it didn't affect me none. That's fine. That's great. But you know what? There are a lot of people who it did affect, and we're going to talk about that on the other side of the break.
Good job. We'll be right back on the RBN Network.
Just to hold the hands I love on this winter night with you. The smoke is rising in the shadows overhead.
For the past 14 years, it's been my privilege to host the National Intel Report on RBN, to offer a platform to interview exceptional guests, to provoke critical thought, and examine evidence, whether real, fake, or somewhere in between, and allow our audience to call in and participate with your input and questions, in order to help us all reach an educated decision and arrive at our own truth. Our world has changed. It's now been turned on its head. Real is now considered fake, and mainstream fake is now pushed as real, rather than any clear thinking, consensus, or rationale.
Those few remaining beacons of light, the ones still shining through the mainstream media lies, propaganda, and deception, are being viciously attacked at every level through attempts at censorship, threatening advertisers, jailing hosts, and even killing journalists brave enough to speak the truth to you. We are in a war for our very freedom and existence, and through these despicable acts, freedom haters, collectivists, and communitarians have shown they will stop at nothing to blot out these last few beacons of light. Truth is becoming increasingly more difficult to unmask, just as the term unmasking itself is spoken by those usually anonymous sources. They promote their lies, wishing to mask the truths by ignoring it, vilifying it, or conspiratorializing it into a black hole abyss.
Regrettably, RBN has reached the tipping point, and through internal audit and actuarial review, it has now been determined that the only life raft of survival to this network is to go the way of PBS, that being audience-supported. Like a cornered animal, the left with veracity is pulling out all the stops with every effort to effectively blacken our beacon forever. Help us, folks. Help yourselves. Don't let our light stop shining. Our motto has always been, because you can handle the truth. It's time to review your budget, folks. If you want the truth to keep flowing through RBN, go to republicbroadcasting.org and become a regular monthly donor of 30, 40, 50, or 100 or more a month and ensure you keep the truth flowing.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Feeling I know I'm in trouble again. I'm in trouble, cause you're a rambler and a gambler and a sweet talking ladies man. And you love your loving. Not like you love your freedom.
Hey, welcome back. Did somebody say freedom? Eric, the Freedom Screamer on the RBN Network. You're listening to Resurrect the Republic. Tom Shell returned and gave this evening to me so I could have James Perloff on tonight. We appreciate James Perloff. That's P-E-R-L-O-F-F, as in Frank, Perloff, James, and it is Refuge Books. So buy his books, follow his stuff, and we really appreciate him giving his time to us tonight, this late hour. James, it's past my bedtime as well, so I can sympathize with you. You're welcome to stay for as long as you'd like. We got all the way up, at, we got 2 hours tonight if we want to use it, but you just stay as long as you're comfortable, and I'm going to turn. Oh, by the way, you can follow this discussion on the internet at freedomscreamradio.chattango.com. That's chattango.com. So, James, with that, I'm going to turn it back to you. Where did we leave off?
Well, first I wanted to say I appreciated your playing Gordon Lightfoot on the bumper music. That's the first time I've heard him many years. Bring back some memories. We were about to talk about some more about the social impact of Darwinism. So, and we talked about the fact that there are some people that it didn't affect him, but there are a lot of people, there are millions of people who it has affected. And just to start with myself, okay, I grew up in an agnostic home, you know, we didn't have any Christianity in it, but I didn't have any particular hostility towards the Bible until the sixth grade. And in the sixth grade, our teacher was teaching us evolution, and I had a little classmate who was raised a Christian, and she raised her hand, and she said, but Mr. Horowitz, that's not what the Bible teaches. Well, he looked at her, you know, with pity in his eyes, because she thought she was just this backwards Christian. He said, well, I'm sorry, dear, but science has proven that the Bible is wrong. Well, at that point, my various classmates piped up, and they said, yeah, the Bible's wrong. It's a bunch of malarkey. Remember, I'm from Boston. We got the Boston accent. No R's. So looks like they didn't teach us the three R's very well either. But so that was the – I didn't know, but that was the first step I took towards being what was later to be an atheist, because I said, oh, I see. So the Bible's just an old myth. So I started to put God in the same category as the Tooth Fairy and Santa Claus and Easter Bunny, just an old myth. And this was the first step I took towards being, for a number of years, I would be an atheist and a hippie. And, you know, you'll notice that people who are atheistic, they are almost inevitably left-wing, not conservative. that's not by chance. But just so people will understand, it's not just me. A few years ago, sure. There was this. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just saying. Sure, it sounds like a familiar story to many of our listeners. I'm sure. Continue.
Okay. Well, here's a quote from Daryl Lambert. He was threatened a few years ago with expulsion from the Boy Scouts. He said, "Quote: I'm an atheist. I believe in evolution." Unquote. You know, the same thing that happened to me happened to him. This guy's in the news. There was a big story at the time because you're supposed to say you believe in God in order to be a Boy Scout. But he was taught evolution in school, thought it discredited the existence of God. Now, here's a quote from E.O. Wilson, famous biologist from Harvard. Quote, "As were many persons from Alabama, I was a born-again Christian. When I was 15, I entered the Southern Baptist Church with great fervor and interest in the fundamentalist religion. I left at 17 when I got to the University of Alabama and heard about evolutionary theory." Now we're getting increasingly famous here. This next quote is from Andrew Carnegie, the steel magnate. And he was probably number two to John D. Rockefeller in terms of his wealth. And he was an atheist. And he formed, of course, the Carnegie Institute Foundation, did a lot of evil things. Quote, This from his autobiography, quote, "When I, along with three or four of my boon companions, was in this state of doubt about theology, including the supernatural element, and indeed the whole scheme of salvation, I came fortunately upon Darwin's works. And remember that light came as in a flood, and all was clear. Not only had I got rid of theology and the supernatural, but I'd found the truth of evolution," unquote. Andrew Carnegie. Now, here's a guy that had a lethal effect, Stalin, Joseph Stalin. He murdered tens of millions, 6 million alone just during the Holodomor, the Holocaust in the Ukraine. Okay, this is quoting his biography published in Moscow in 1940 called Landmarks in the Life of Stalin. Quote, "At a very early age, while still a pupil in the ecclesiastical school, Comrade Stalin developed a critical mind and revolutionary sentiments. He began to read Darwin and became an atheist. Jigler Jidji, a boyhood friend of Stalin's, relates, I began to speak of God. Joseph heard me out, and after a moment's silence said, you know, their fooliness, there is no God. I was astonished at these words. I had never heard anything like it before. How can you say such things, So-so? I exclaimed. I will lend you a book to read. It will show you that the world and all living things are quite different from what you imagine, and all this talk about God is sheer nonsense, Joseph said. What book is that? I inquired. Darwin, you must read it. Joseph impressed on me, unquote, Landmarks in the Life of Stalin. Karl Marx said this, the founder of communism, he said, quote, Darwin's book is very important and serves me as a basis in natural science for the class struggle in history, unquote. You know, of course, we're up to the break. We'll continue on the other side.
Well, very interesting that Stalin got his Darwin training in the Antichrist system when he was at ecclesiastic school. We'll be right back after this break. It's Eric the Freedom Screamer on the RBN Network. We got James Perloff. Stay with us. It's a great night. Hold on.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Okay, nurse, let's get this man to the ER stat.
Right away, doctor.
We see this every day. Heart attack or angina pain due to blocked and clogged arteries. Chelation can remove obstructions or blockages from arteries and help avoid painful and expensive surgery. Now there's Angioprim. It's a liquid oral chelation product that you take with juice. You start to feel the results fast. Angioprim increases blood flow all over the body, and that means more energy and strength to take on the day with less aches and pains. 60 years of research has gone into chelation, and Angioprim is the result. A safe and easy way to unblock your veins and arteries from buildup that slow circulation.
Paging Dr. Jones, please report to the emergency room right away.
Log on now for a special radio offer from Angioprim. That's angioprim.com/radio. A-N-G-I-O-P-R-I-M. Angioprim.com/radio or call 877-882-7221. That's 877-882-7221.
Extendivite is more than just a heart tonic. Most basic diseases are caused by yeast in the gut and metals in the liver, and we all have a bit of both. The garlic in Extendivite has a yeast-killing effect in the gut while also helping the sulfur enzyme in the liver get rid of the metals. Extendivite just may improve your overall health. Products like Extendivite are the only way we are going to get our society healthy. And if you're waiting for the government and pharmaceutical care to solve your health problems, you're going to have a long, disappointing wait, I think. Extendivite is a complete formula for extended life in the new millennium. 80 can be the new 60. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a two-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find gain some stability with Battenfield Tactical Bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Welcome back, my friends. Welcome back to the broadcast. We appreciate you joining us. It's Eric the Freedom Screamer with Gary and Chris kicking in the background. Tonight it's James Perloff, and we appreciate him giving his time to us tonight. This is a fascinating discussion. And we were just, so did you all, I don't know, I have not been on the air too long, James, so you may not be familiar with the totality of my work, but I often try to expose the influence that the Vicar General's office, which is in every diocese, which is in every county in the country, has over the local and state and federal courts, and I can prove it. Do that another time. But did you hear what part? The reason I do this is because of the undue influence the Vatican has right up to this day over our courts and over our legislators, especially through the bar and the banking system. Isn't it interesting that Joseph Stalin, arguably the world's largest mass murderer, somewhere in the 40 to 50 million range, if you include the starvation, which you have to, and got his training in ecclesiastic school. James Perloff, back to you.
Yeah, it just shows you that the impact that that Darwin's teachings could have on someone who was being trained perhaps in not the most effective manner in the school that he was attending at the time. He, you know, there are those who are deceived and those who are not who attend theological training. He was obviously among the fooled. And the impact upon that the world felt afterwards was great. Well, we were talking about Marx and influential people and less influential people, such as myself and others, who were turned into atheists by Darwin. And I think a person who summarized the situation very well was the historian Will Durant. Here's what he said, quote, "By offering evolution in place of God as a cause of history, Darwin removed the theological basis of the moral code of Christendom. The moral code that has no fear of God is very shaky. That's the condition we're in," unquote. That was 1980. I think it was not too long before he passed away. And he had a lot of perspective to look back upon. And that's what Darwin himself said, by the way. You know, I want to stress that Darwinism is not a scientific endeavor. It has scientific trappings to give it credibility. But it's what Darwin himself said in 1873 in private correspondence. Now, he's going to refer here to Lyell, that is his friend Charles Lyell, the geologist, who was his closest friend and who probably did more than anyone else to convince the world that the globe was very, very old. Here's what Darwin said, quote, "Lyell is most firmly convinced that he's shaken the faith in the deluge," meaning the biblical flood, "far more efficiently by never having said a word against the Bible than if he had acted otherwise. I read lately Morley's Life of Voltaire, and he insists strongly that direct attacks on Christianity, even when written with the wonderful force and vigor of Voltaire, produce little permanent effect. Real good seems only to follow the slow and silent side attacks," unquote, Charles Darwin, 1873. So you see, guys, what Darwin was saying here was that, you know, in Victorian England, it was very unpopular in that age of Christendom to be an atheist, to admit that. So Darwin didn't want to come out and directly attack the Bible. What he talks about here is a slow and silent side attack. He wouldn't directly attack the Bible. Instead, he would say, well, you know, there's scientific proof that this is how man and life actually evolved. This is how they actually came about, without saying a word against the Bible itself. and then let that produce effects upon its own power upon the minds of men, especially young, vulnerable students in schools. Now, from the Illuminati perspective, because this is very much part of their New World Order, this was very much something that they were interested in advancing. And why is that? Because once you make God a myth, once you take him away as creator, then the Bible becomes a myth. When the Bible becomes a myth, the Ten Commandments become a myth. And why would the powers that be in this country and around the globe want to make the Bible a myth? They wanted to do so because they wanted the kind of world that Lucifer could operate in, and they wanted, what do the Ten Commandments say? They say that you should not lie. Well, they wanted politicians and newsmen who would lie for them. The Ten Commandments say do not steal. They wanted bankers and currency manipulators who would steal for them. Ten Commandments say not to steal, not to kill. Well, they wanted, they're into population control, right? They wanted vaccinologists and soldiers and chemtrail pilots, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, who would kill for them. So it was very important for them to get the Ten Commandments out of the way. And because the public at large had a great respect for science, they felt that advancing atheism as a scientific conclusion would have the greatest effect.
That's very interesting, James. Yeah, please continue. I'm riveted. It explains everything about why there's a lack of morality in the world today, and how quickly people are to find that place they can go to and say, oh, great, I don't have to have a conscience now. I don't have to care about anybody else. I can worry about myself, self. Screw everything and just, you know, move on with my life. And boy, and it explains the depraved world in which we live, does it not, James?
Yes, and that's a good point, that one reason why Darwin's theory is readily accepted, because it plays right into our own temptations. Once you introduce to someone the idea that God does not exist, well, that then your own lower nature takes over and says, well, great, well, that means I have an excuse to sin. I mean, if science says that there's no God and I'm not accountable, there'll never be a judgment day, why worry? So it was an easily accepted theory. But I think at this point, this is where we transition away from the social impact, because, you know, a lot of people will say, you know, it doesn't really matter what you're saying here about social effects of Darwinism making people atheists, etc. It doesn't really matter because this theory is as well proven as the laws of gravity. It's a science exactly like physics and chemistry. And if you don't believe in it, you're some you're a real buffoon, you know, some rustic. You must have come into town on a cart of pumpkins. You must have been born yesterday if you don't believe in the theory of evolution. It's as well proven as the laws of gravity. So what I want to transition to here is to the scientific proof against Darwinism, because we'll find that it's actually a house of cards.
Excellent.
Well, here's what I want to do. And please, you jump in any time, because if I talk for too long, you know, I'll go a little bit brain dead on you. my voice will give out. Actually, what's happening?
And by the way, James, you know, as you're going along, and I understand that there are some pictorial things and some images you wanted to share with people, just describe it as best you can, you know, mm-hmm. for the audience in its basic form. Because I remember I saw one of your pieces. You know, you showed some pictures of the, you know, the evolution of man and the in-between apes, some of the, I think, fossil evidence that was or was not there. And so mm-hmm. you're, but I don't think any of it's crucial to the points you're making, which are excellent. And please proceed into the scientific case for creationism.
Okay. Well, if we have time, what I'd like to do is to explain four strong scientific evidences against Darwinism, and then we'll take a couple of proofs that the Darwinists themselves use and we'll debunk them. But the first thing we should do is give everyone a 1 minute refresher on what the theory of evolution says. This is where I usually have a graphic, makes it easier. But generally speaking, according to the theory of evolution, life began on this earth a long, long time ago when the first single-celled creatures were formed by chance. And these single-celled creatures began to evolve, and they became the marine invertebrates, in other words, sea-going invertebrates, creatures without a backbone like a jellyfish. Then these invertebrates evolved into fish, which did have bones. And then the fish, they long to come on shore. They come to come onto dry land, so their fins begin evolving into little legs. And over time, they came on shore, and then they evolved into the first amphibians, which are creatures that can go on land or water, such as a frog. Then the amphibians evolved into reptiles, like a lizard. And then the reptiles evolved into mammals, like a rabbit. And then eventually the mammals kept on evolving until they became these ape-like creatures who evolved into man. And that, in a nutshell, is what the theory of evolution says. It might vary a little bit from one school of thought or another, but that's basically what children have been taught for a long, long time. So let's see what's wrong with that. Area of proof number one, the beginning of life. We start at the beginning. Okay, so they say that random chemicals could come together and form these first single-celled ancestors of ours. Well, you know, that might have been kind of believable in Charles Darwin's day, because he thought that cells were simple and that the simpler a thing was, the easier it would be for something to come about. You know, small is simple. But now we know, through advances that have been made, that cells are anything but simple. And I'm going to give you a quote. Quote, simple one-celled bacterium, R. coli, contains DNA information units that are the equivalent of 100 million pages of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Unquote, and that is from the Encyclopedia Britannica. Now, if you look at what cells consist of, cells consist essentially of proteins, and there's thousands of different proteins in a cell, and each, even a bacterial cell, and each cell, each protein is in turn founded upon a smaller building block called amino acids, and there's hundreds of amino acids to make up one protein. They have to be in the right order for them to function. Now, you've probably heard of Sir Francis Crick. He won the Nobel Prize for co-discovering the structure of DNA. Sir Francis Crick was a skeptic of Darwinism, and he estimated what the odds are of developing one protein by chance in the ancient ocean. You know what the odds are? They are 1 in 10 to the power of 260. And if you want to know how big a number that is, you couldn't fit
that. That's all?
Well, mathematicians usually say that anything with odds greater than 1 in 10 to the power of 50 is, for all practical purposes, impossible. So it would be impossible to get one protein by chance, let alone the thousands a cell would need. But a cell would also need the genetic code. And for the genetic code to be working, it has to be translated. The cell actually has devices that translate the genetic code. So which came first, the genetic code or the device that translates it? A cell also requires the ability to ingest nutrients and expel wastes. Again, which came first? Did they both, you know, evolve by chance at the same time? But here's one that I really think is significant. You know, for these cells to keep on, they would have to develop the process of cellular reproduction. So what we have to believe in Darwin is that in the span of one lifetime, the first cell that came about by chance, through trial and error before it died, would have developed and perfected the entire process of cellular reproduction. Because if it didn't, the process of evolution would stop right there. Yeah,
right, exactly. You got it. Common sense tells you it could never happen.
Right. It's common sense tells you that this is mathematically impossible. Even Sir Francis Crick has said so, Nobel Prize winner. And on top of that, I'd just like to point out that science is normally based on observations. Do we have any observations that chemicals can come together and form complex functional molecular or cellular structures? No, there's no observations to support it up.
And also, if you use the word in one lifetime, I mean, come on, people, there's just no way it's possible. It had to be by design. It can't just spontaneously combust like that or initiate itself. It strains the imagination to believe what the evolutionists are purporting.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. By the way, I should mention that Charles Darwin himself got this idea going in his book on the Origin of Species. He declared that life had begun in a warm little pond, and he speculated what the first chemicals were that formed this first cell. Of course, he did not know about DNA at the time. But eventually they changed the pond to an ocean because they realized that a pond would not last for millions of years required for this to take place. But totally absurd. Okay, so that's strike one on Charles Darwin. And we'll move on to area two, which is genetics. Now, we've all heard of genes. I don't want to get complicated, but we know that our physical makeup is dictated by genes. So a kangaroo will give birth to a baby kangaroo because she's got kangaroo genes. She won't give birth to a baby penguin. Now, Charles Darwin was not aware of genetics, at least in his earlier years. It was not a science. And Charles Darwin believed that animals simply have an unlimited capacity to adapt to their environment. Here's what he wrote in his big book, quote, speaking of environmental adaptation, quote, "By this process long continued, it seems to me almost certain that an ordinary hoofed quadruped, four-footed creature, might be converted into a giraffe," unquote. So what's Darwin saying? He's saying if you put any four-footed hoofed creature, such as a donkey, put him in the right atmosphere, a right environment like the jungle, that could change him into a giraffe. Well, with the discovery of genetics, we knew that that was not true, because giraffe genes are quite different from donkey genes, and, you know, putting a donkey in the African jungle is not going to give him giraffe genes. And initially, believe it or not, the science of genetics was opposed by Darwinists because they couldn't figure this out. How, you know, we're supposed to have evolved from fish, right? Well, how did our genes are remarkably different from the genes of a fish. So how did the fish ever get the genes to become human beings? And they were stumped by this for a long time. But eventually it was discovered that genes will occasionally mutate. You know, there'll be a random mutation and where there'll be a copying mistake in a gene. And this can happen by chance or sometimes for an environmental cause. You know, if you go to the dentist, if they take an x-ray, they'll throw a lead apron on you to protect you from the x-rays.
Well, and James, if I can interject here, only a very slight, minuscule, almost unnoticeable change. You're not talking about anything major that's going to change the giraffe to the donkey or the ape to the human, to the man or woman. Those mutations, in my research are just so small, they could never produce the results that the evolutionists are purporting once again.
That's right. And backing up what you're saying is, Dr. Lee Spetner. Now, he's no dweeb. He, graduated from MIT, PhD, and he taught information science for many years at Johns Hopkins University. And he wrote a book called Not by Chance, Shattering the Modern Theory of Evolution. He spent years studying mutations on a molecular level. And I'm going to quote what he writes in his book, quote, "In all the reading I've done in life sciences literature, I've never found a mutation that added information. All point mutations that have been studied on the molecular level turn out to reduce genetic information and not increase it." Unquote, Dr. Spetner. By the way, a point mutation is the most basic type of mutation in the genetic code. What's he saying here? Mutations will never add information. They only decrease it. And that agrees with what we observe. What do mutations cause in human beings? Sickle cell anemia, cystic fibrosis, Down syndrome, hemophilia, and thousands of other genetic diseases. We never see mutations making people better or stronger. So the entire building block of evolution by actual observation doesn't work. In fact, Richard Dawkins, who is probably the leading spokesperson for evolution in the world today, was asked in a televised interview to name a mutation that has created a new function or new level of information. And Dawkins sat for a long time in silence and finally he said, "Take the camera off of me." And he never could answer that. But this is the building block. Now, I want to point out something here. If you talk to evolutionists, they will speak of beneficial mutations. Once in a while, there will be a benefit to a mutation. But here's the key to understanding that. It always decreases function. And I'll give you an example. Okay, I've been on radio two times talking about creation versus evolution. I had evolutionists call in, and they gave me sickle cell anemia as an example of evolution from mutation. Now, sickle cell anemia is a disease, so it's a weird example to pick for evolution, but it is caused by mutation. What's the benefit? Well, it turns out that people that don't that have sickle cell anemia do not get malaria. And so evolutionists will use this as an example of how wonderful a mutation can be. You see, it makes the red blood cells so strong that it doesn't get malaria. Well, if you actually take a look, I don't have the picture. I would have the picture. If you look at a sickle cell, it's deformed. It's misshapen. The function of the red blood cell is to transport oxygen. Sickle cells have lost much of that function. They clog your arteries. They cause intense pain. Now, I'm a registered nurse. You know, people used to, back in the 70s, people would die in their 20s from this disease. Nobody hopes that their child will be born with this mutational disorder because here's what's going on. The parasites that cause malaria, they don't like to go into these deformed cells. But you have not increased. That's not evolution. You've lost function. You have not gained it. Sure, there's a benefit. You know what? If you cut off your foot, it'll prevent you from getting athlete's foot. There's a benefit.
It's kind of like chemo. It's kind of like chemotherapy too. You know, it's poison to heal. It defies common sense once again. And funny how if the information, genetic information, when it does mutate or adjust or adapt, can never really move forward to add information. It can only delete or modify what it has in order to maybe resist something or cause a slight variance. And so, once again, that's just the opposite of evolution. Genetics proved de-evolution. It can only go backwards if your theory is that there's any progression forward, or it looks that it's backwards, not forwards for the evolutionist. So that right there, kind of sinks them right there. I mean, so please continue.
Oh, sure. If you take the human heart, any mutation to the human heart will cause a genetic a heart defect. We've never seen a mutation that improved the human heart. A fair analogy to a mutation would be a typographical error in a book. We've all seen typographical errors. Now, is it possible that a typographical error might improve the information in a book? It's possible. I've never seen it happen. It's conceivable that a typo might improve the information. But I'll tell you what, a typo is not going to take the driver's manual for your car and turn it into the novel Gone from the Wind. And that's what evolutionists are claiming when they said the mutations turned a bacterium into a human being.
It just cannot happen. You're proving the case against the, doing a great job of debunking the evolutionists, and once again, de facto, even if you're not coming out and saying yes, it just proves that there has to, the only other option is if there's no evolution, there has to be a creative force, whatever people think that force may be. Very interesting. James, continue. We got 3 or 4 minutes till the top of the hour, and I'm hoping you've got enough energy to stay with us a little longer. Is that possible?
Okay. Yeah, I think I should take this to completion. Okay,
great.
Well, that's evidence number two. Evidence number three against evolution. Now, again, evolutionists claim that we went from a microorganism, a bacterium, to an invertebrate, to a fish, to an amphibian, to a reptile, to a mammal, to people. Now, if you look at the world around us, there are tens of thousands of species that fit into these categories of bacteria, invertebrates, fish, amphibians, reptiles, mammals, people. But how many species are there that are in between? And the answer is zero. There's not a creature on the face of the earth that is in between any of those categories. So how?
Yeah, maybe you would call that a transition species that would lead you from the fish to the. You're right, and yeah, continue.
Right. Well, this is a major problem for evolutionists. So what they say is, well, all the transitional forms became extinct. Well, that's a very convenient excuse. That's like saying my dog ate the homework and that's why I don't have it. But the fact of the matter is they should be all over the planet, these in-between forms. And by the way, this is one of the reasons why Carolus Linnaeus was the founder of taxonomy. He's the one who first started calling animals species, genus, and class and order and so forth. He was the pioneer of taxonomy. He was a Christian. He said, you know what? There's no overlaps. And that's one of the reasons he did not believe in evolution.
Fascinating. No, right. There would have to be some fossil found somewhere, sometime in the last God knows how many centuries. Are you kidding me? Right. There's claiming that someone would have had to have found evidence of that crossover or a transition species that leads from that one evolutionary step or that one species to the next. It's preposterous. And with genetics as complex as they are, how many zeros do we have to add on to the probability that these would be somehow spontaneously generated? It's just impossible. So if there's anything you want to do in a minute, James, I think we got about a minute, we got a break coming up for the top of the hour, and then we're going to take a real quick break, and then we'll get right back with you. So let me just do this. Let me promote James' stuff. James got some fantastic books, and it's always good to have a hard copy paper book, I'm telling you, because when the computer goes down or somebody jams up your white screens your computer or black screens it, and I've had it happen, I've got my calls dumped while I was doing this broadcast. Unexplainable beeps and then dumps, and then I got to get back on. So people, don't count on your technology, although, you know, we want to use it. Don't become solely dependent upon that. Go buy a book. And you can go to Refuge Books. Is it refugebooks.com, James?
It's the jamesperloff.com. I used to be Refuge Books. My website was taken down, but I'm jamesperloff.com.
join the club. Jamesperloff.com. He's going to stay with us for some more time. Hang tight. It's Eric the Freedom Streamer. You are listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. We'll be right back.
Silence of my room. I hear your voice softly calling. If I could only have you near to breathe a sigh or two, I would be happy just to hold the hands I love on this winter night with you.
There is an ongoing war right here in America. Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.